Welcome to the Flannery Podcast. This is episode 34, the issue, Theocracy or Not. Stay tuned. In an earlier podcast, we spoke about Trump's abuse of power when nominating a justice to serve his personal agenda on the court in violation of due process, including a tacit agreement from the nominee, Judge Amy Barrett, to play defense for Trump on the Supreme Court once confirmed should Trump have to challenge the election results because he lost. There's another constitutional aspect of this judicial nomination that barely got lip service on the Hill. It is the issue of separating church from state. It was an issue that screamed for attention and discussion, but the Dems, as best as I could tell, tiptoed around it. Trump, an unbeliever in faith and an amoral man, grants support for religious initiatives that seek to establish religion. We should consider what was not discussed on the Hill during the nomination of Judge Barrett, who will supplant the law and precedent, particularly Roe v. Wade, replacing the law with the religious dogma of her cultish faith. In the case of Roe v. Wade, the most obvious illustration of the religious belief that Barrett would supplant for law is her religious belief, an article of faith that a zygote is a person, that a fecundated ovum is a person, that at the moment of conception you have a person who may overrule the prerogatives of the pregnant mother. She's welcome to believe that, but the separation of church and state means she may not impose it on others, and she certainly may not do it on the Supreme Court. Let's discuss that now. Stay tuned. A palimpsest is an old writing scraped from the original manuscript material to make room for a later overwriting, leaving only traces of the original. We have witnessed an erosion of the plain meaning of the words found in the First Amendment to the United States Constitution prohibiting any government, federal, state, or local, from establishing a religion. The Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom is a statement about both freedom of conscience and the principle of separation of church and state. It was written by Thomas Jefferson and passed by the Virginia General Assembly on January 16, 1786. It was the forerunner of the First Amendment protections for religious freedom. Divided into three paragraphs, the statute is rooted in Jefferson's philosophy. It could be passed in Virginia because dissenting sects, particularly Baptists, Presbyterians, and Methodists, had petitioned strongly during the preceding decade for religious liberty, including the separation of church and state. Congress passed its own amendment, following upon the one authored by Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson's act inspired and shaped the guarantee of religious liberty. The text of the 1786 Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom gives great insight into our nation's First Amendment right. It reads, quote, "No man shall be compelled to frequent or support any religious worship, place, or ministry whatsoever, nor shall be enforced in his body or goods, nor shall otherwise suffer on account of his religious opinions or belief, but that all men shall be free to profess and by argument to maintain their opinion in matters of religion, and that the same shall in no wise diminish, enlarge, or affect their civil capacities." In short, the act affirmed what we should recognize in every era, the right to practice any faith or to have no faith as a fundamental foundational freedom for all Americans. This right is also behind what Jefferson meant when he spoke of a wall of separation between the church and the state. Jefferson's famous phrase came in an 1802 letter to the Danbury Baptist Association in Connecticut. The Baptists were worried about the freedom to practice their faith, writing to Jefferson that what religious privileges we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights, which is inconsistent with the rights of freemen. Jefferson wrote back that religious liberty, free from state tampering, would be a key part of the American vision. The Constitution, he wrote, would restore to man all his natural rights. In this same letter, Jefferson explained the intent of the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment to the Constitution, which reads, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof." Thus, he said, he had built a wall of separation of church and state. Jefferson was not suggesting that religious people or religious motivation should be exiled from public debate. That's not what it says. As a matter of fact, the letter was from a religious people appealing to an elected official for their rights. An elected official, by the way, who attended church services during his administration inside the United States Capitol. In its day, a constitutional prohibition that the state would not establish or restrain personal faith was truly revolutionary. Unlike many places in the world, our government is not prohibited from referencing or accommodating religion, nor is the government compelled to scrub all religious references from the public square. Rather, the First Amendment ensures both that the government does not show preference to a certain religion and that the government does not take away an individual's ability to exercise religion. In other words, the church should not rule over the state, and the state cannot rule over the church. In 2014, the Supreme Court held in Town of Greece against Galloway that, quote, "it is an elemental First Amendment principle the government may not coerce its citizens to support or participate in any religion or its exercise." In Town of Greece, the court was clear that the government cannot coerce someone to participate in a particular religion. Before he died, Thomas Jefferson left instructions that in his grave's epitaph, he wished to be remembered for three things, and one of them being the Virginia Statute of Religious Freedom. The primary test used to evaluate claims under the Establishment Clause is known as the tripartite test, often referred to as the Lemon test. Under this test, a law must have a secular purpose, must have a primary effect that neither advances nor inhibits religions, and must not lead to excessive entanglement with religion. One application of the Lemon test focuses on whether the government has endorsed religion. The government is prohibited from making adherence to a religion relevant in any way to a person's standing in the political community. Isn't that what is happening when a Judge Barrett or Associate Justices Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, Thomas, or Alito are doing when they embrace as a fundamental principle what is an article of faith, that life begins at conception rather than following the law and medical science that rebuts the article of faith, rather than following Roe v. Wade and Griswold against Connecticut, that we would think by the precedence of law have established the law? This application of the Lemon test forbids government endorsement or disapproval of religion, noting that endorsement sends a message to non-adherents that they are outsiders, and an accompanying message to adherents that they are insiders, favored members of the political community. Disapproval sends the opposite message. So when a Judge Barrett takes the court, are we on notice that her faith is now the rule and that those who disagree are excluded? But if she were to follow the law, where would we be then? We would be having a government by law, not by faith, a government by precedent, not by an activist judge who would replace her notions of whatever natural law is to supersede and overcome the precedence of the court. This has a special meaning when the article of religious faith that she espouses divides a woman from her right to be let alone. Another application of the Lemon test focuses on neutrality as the governing principle in the Establishment Clause challenges. Under this interpretation, the essential element in evaluating challenges under the Lemon test is whether or not the government act is neutral between religions and between religion and non-religion. Is the government neutral when it espouses as Christian faith or natural law the religious fiction that a fertilized egg is a person, when that can be found in no medical science? can be found in No Principle of Law, was not part of the reasoning when either Griswold was law or Roe v. Wade was law. In addition to the Lemon Test, the court has used two other tests to evaluate Establishment Clause claims. The coercion test forbids the government from acting in a way that may coerce support or participation in religious practices. Well, you know, when you have Judge Barrett deciding that a woman cannot have an abortion, what is the effect of that? Is that coercing support for her principle of faith and denying that woman the right over her own body because of a religious principle that a conception equals a person to the disadvantage of the person who is the mother? Let's take a look back to another presidential election when the issue of religion and how it was handled in the public square, so we can consider how it may inform how we should handle the issue now. And why did our Senate fail to discuss it when it was so fairly in front of them and before them in the confirmation hearings of Judge Barrett? Stay tuned. By way of background, over the years, I've had a wonderful friendship with the twin brothers Wine, Charlie Wine and Jim Wine. I miss Charles, who is no longer with us. Holly and I visited abroad with Jim and Ava. Charlie and Jim once described their dad, Jim W. Wine Jr., by what he did with his life, whose work in the law revealed the depth of his philosophy and of his caring for the humanity that populates the planet. I don't seek to reduce this man of the law and of a religious spirit and faith to one issue, as he did so much more with his life. But he did counsel John F. Kennedy in 1960 on the separation of church and state. The religious issue that bedeviled the young Catholic senator's candidacy for the presidency. But Senator Kennedy was not going to skirt the issue, and that made all the difference. We could use some of that gumption today in the Senate. Jim's papers, which I've used to talk about his thinking at the time, can be found at the JFK Library. And they can be found online as well. Jim met Jack Kennedy while Jim was in Washington on some private matters, and he knew Ted Sorensen, an aide. In early 1960, Jim first discussed with Ted the religious problem. Many believed it was former Governor Al Smith, his Catholic faith, that cost him the presidential election in 1928. Jim said, "We intellectualized a bit about the matter and visited what some older people had to say about the 1928 campaign involving Al Smith. The question was, do we hit this issue head on? As for whether they knew this was going to be a big issue, Jim had no doubts that this was going to be a big issue, not at all. There was some concern that discussing it would run the risk of becoming exaggerated to the point where other very important and significant issues of the campaign might be obscured, or there might be some diminution of interest or concern about those issues. It didn't help their reasoning that former First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt criticized Senator Kennedy's ability to separate church and state matters completely. West Virginia may have been the first chance to test the issue, a state, according to Jim, of largely rural people, and the religious groups there were by tradition very conservative, many fundamentalists, many religious sects as opposed to denominations, and there were no heavily concentrated Catholic centers. It was realized when considering West Virginia that now was the time when certain precedents were going to be set that would probably have real influence throughout the whole campaign. Jim said, "I proposed a statement not longer than one page, hopefully, that would be signed by 15 to 20 leading clergymen in the country. Many subscribed. The effort succeeded." This was really the first time, Jim said, that the issue had come out to full bloom, both locally, where the battle was being fought at the time, as well as attracting national attention and involving the Protestant clergy to the extent that it did. "I can recall one or two," Jim said, "they were pretty hard-nosed, but they were irrational and unreasonable about it." Eventually, among all the conduct during the presidential election, Jim received a call from Herbert Mez, a Presbyterian minister, and the president of the Council of Churches of Greater Houston, who talked with Jim about Senator Kennedy making a speech on the religious question in Houston, Texas. Jim passed it on to Ted Sorensen and recommended that Kennedy make the appearance. Do it. On the president's plane in Indiana, Jim and Ted met with Kennedy to discuss the appearance. They decided to go all in on the speech. A draft was prepared. Kennedy added his edits, and that was the historic speech that Kennedy gave that is frequently quoted to this day on the question of separating church from state. Jim said, "There were those who said a confrontation is unwise." Ted called them nervous Nellies. Kenny O'Donnell and Pierre Salinger agreed with Jim and Ted and Kennedy, so it was a go. Jim said, "There was no doubt in my mind that it would make or break us. I felt that strongly about it and said so." As important as this issue was, Kennedy's Irish humor was never far removed. When there was a campaign stop in Jim's hometown, he introduced the senator to his mom. Kennedy said, "Glad to have Jim with us." But then he added, "We're going to convert him, incidentally, you know." Jim was Presbyterian. Kennedy was obviously Catholic. Jim's mom then relentlessly interrogated her son. What did he mean by that? Let's consider some excerpts from Kennedy's speech, the one they worked on, that he presented on September the 12th, 1960, that made all the difference. At the least, you'll wonder why we can't address head-on the difficult issues of the day, today, when our nation is in a crisis, and this is part of that crisis. Stay tuned. Senator Kennedy first wanted it clear to the assembly that there were more critical issues than his religion.
"While the so-called religious issue is necessarily and properly the chief topic here tonight, I want to emphasize from the outset that I believe that we have far more critical issues in the 1960 campaign. The spread of communist influence, until it now festers only 90 miles from the coast of Florida, the humiliating treatment of our president and vice president by those who no longer respect our power, the hungry children I saw in West Virginia, the old people who cannot pay their doctor's bills, the families forced to give up their farms, and America with too many slums, with too few schools, and too late to the moon and outer space."
At the same time, Kennedy was appealing to his audience based on the issues. Kennedy explained that he believed in an America that promoted brotherhood. Isn't that the golden rule? Kennedy continued,
"That is the kind of America in which I believe, and it represents the kind of presidency in which I believe. A great office that must be neither humbled by making it the instrument of any religious group, nor tarnished by arbitrarily withholding it, its occupancy from the members of any one religious group. I believe in a president whose views on religion are his own private affair, neither imposed upon him by the nation, nor imposed by the nation upon him as a condition to holding that office."
Kennedy did not believe the president should impose his religious views upon the nation. But that's precisely what Trump did with his nomination of Judge Barrett, and what she agreed to perform by her tacit approval to play dumb in Trump's decision to promote her. She said she hadn't read the newspapers. Really? Judge Barrett seeks to impose a religious view that has no medical nor scientific correspondence, is based entirely on an article of the Roman Catholic faith, that conception is the beginning of life and personhood, no matter that this is not the law, nor medically true, nor even is it inevitable that conception will result in a birth. Yet that is her operating principle for looking at the law. Trump chose Judge Barrett because she made it clear that Roe v. Wade was a lesser precedent. There are super precedents, she wrote. But Roe v. Wade is not a super precedent. It's an artificial division Judge Barrett referenced in an article she wrote about how worthy is a precedent to avoid being overturned. Judge Barrett would overrule the non-super precedents that are Griswold against Connecticut about birth control and Roe v. Wade, which is about abortion. During her testimony, she said she was good with Brown against Board of Education, but wouldn't say about Griswold or Roe. And thus did she say what she intended and she believes by saying nothing. Presumably, there are some few late to this discussion who may ask, how can we know that she would do this? I don't agree that it's a fair question. Trump himself told us that's why she was nominated. Kennedy, in his speech, continued as follows.
I would not look with favor upon a president working to subvert the First Amendment's guarantees of religious liberty. Nor would our system of checks and balances permit him to do so. And neither do I look with favor upon those who would work to subvert Article 6 of the Constitution by requiring a religious test, even by indirection. For if they disagree with that safeguard, they should be openly working to repeal it.
One senator said that the Senate could not force a religious test on Judge Barrett, misapprehending what Article 6 is all about. Judge Barrett is precisely what concerns Article 6. The Republican caucus wants her as a Catholic who will put her belief ahead of the law. Sure, there are Catholics and other persons of faith who can put aside their faith and follow the law. Judge Barrett is not one of those persons. Consider how Jack Kennedy was shunned as a presidential contender because he was Catholic. He had to reassure the nation that his acts would be based on the law and not dogma. Judge Barrett had the same challenge, except in her case, nothing could be further from the truth. Article 6 of the Constitution provides that no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. The Federalist Society put Judge Barrett on the list because of her religion and that she would follow through on her faith, opposing abortion for religious reasons, following her Roman Catholic faith, disregarding her oath, should she be confirmed later this week, so that this faith will supplant the law. Kennedy said in Houston, he opposed requiring a religious test, even by indirection. Trump's nomination of Barrett is not so indirect. Kennedy said he was well aware of the pronouncements by various religious leaders, but he did not consider them binding on any of his public acts. Senator Kennedy continued.
But let me say, with respect to other countries, that I am wholly opposed to the state being used by any religious group, Catholic or Protestant, to compel, prohibit, or prosecute the free exercise of any other religion. And that goes for any persecution at any time by anyone in any country. And I hope that you and I condemn with equal fervor those nations which deny their presidency to Protestants and those which deny it to Catholics. And rather than cite the misdeeds of those who differ, I would also cite the record of the Catholic Church in such nations as France and Ireland, and the independence of such statesmen as de Gaulle and Adenauer.
Our Senate, certainly the Republicans, but also the less ferocious Dems, who slid past this critical question of whether in the end they would passively permit a theocracy for fear of engaging the issue that a young senator and Jim and Ted and the campaign team assumed because it was important to the nation to do so. Well, this is that article, this is that discussion, this is what you should discuss with others about the state of our nation. I want to thank the late and Jim Wine for his life service and dedicate this review on separation of church and state to him and to his sons, Charles and Jim. Thanks for joining me on this winding discussion of separation. Subscribe if you haven't. Talk to you next Sunday. Be safe. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.